Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Tayas. Pete, we are vacation's over. We're back at it again.
Ball is life, baby.
I was like, it was funny because Jen was just saying the other day, like, man, it's been nice to actually have you around, and you're actually, you know, focused on stuff that isn't basketball. We got to go to Harry Potter World, and we have Havasu coming up next week, and this has been really nice. And I, like, 5 minutes after that, I got the email, hey, we're going to need you to go to daily shows again. It was one of those devil on each shoulder moments. Do I tell her? Do I try to act as if I don't have all this extra work now? I wound up telling her, and she hasn't spoken to me since. So now I'm talking to you. today, and as I said in yesterday's show, we're kicking off our player previews, and we're kicking it off with a bang. We're going to talk about LeBron James. I gave Pete a little bit of heads up so that he can do some background research on LeBron coming into this year, looking ahead to next year, the format of this, and I'll keep reminding you guys the format as we go along here. But we're going to look back in segment one. We're going to look ahead to him individually in section two. And then in segment three, we're going to look at him in the team construct. And I'm doing segment three because it's the longer one. We have a little bit more flexibility there. And with LeBron, since he's going to be so impactful, I think that's going to go a little bit longer here. So you guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find us. Let's dive right into this. LeBron comes into this year in year, what is it, 15?
This will be 16 for him.
Yeah, he's coming off of year 15, and cool, my internet is frozen here. But he's coming into year 15 with some pretty astronomical numbers here. Pete, you haven't done nearly enough talking here, so why don't you give us a little bit of background on what he did last year and how you're going to use that context to look ahead to what he might be able to do this year.
So last year when Cleveland visited LA in March was the first time I've ever seen LeBron in person, which was a real treat. And one of the things you pick up different things in person, obviously, than you do when watching on TV. And one of the things that really stood out to me was how much less effort he was expending than anybody else mm-hmm. on the court. And he picked his spots and he had, I think, near a triple double and, you know, great numbers, great impact. The Lakers won that game, right? But he was just, it was very obvious this guy is not going 100%. And Brian Windhorst actually had a really interesting piece on this, on how LeBron has learned how to rest during games. And if you look up his data on like miles per hour or average speed, he's near the bottom of the league, right? He spends, yeah. I saw some data in that piece where like 74% of the time he's on the court, he's walking. Mm-hmm. So like 3 out of 4 possessions, or yeah, 74% of the time he's walking. So he's really picking his spot. So that's something that when I watched him last year, that really stood out to me. And a big part of that is he's, for one, all of the mileage that he has on his legs, but he also knew the lay of the land in the Eastern Conference. That team was never worried about where they were going to be seated, if they were going to make the playoffs or anything like that, right? So he knew exactly how much effort he needed to expend during the regular season in order to get where they needed to get to, which was another finals appearance down the road, right? And he turned it up during the playoffs. He's not going to have that luxury with the Lakers. And so within all of that, they won 50 games and they were, you know, a top 10 offense once again, which he's almost invariably throughout his career, he's been on a top 10 offense. So that were really the hallmarks of his career, of his season last year. But the one thing that really stood out to me by the numbers at the very least, and you can see this on tape as well, is they were 6 points per 100 possessions better on the defensive end when he was off of the court versus on. He was a legitimately below average defender last year, and whether it's by tape or whether it's by those numbers, his defensive RPM numbers, all of them point in the same direction. So I'm curious. I don't necessarily think it's a loss of capability, but I think that ties in with the whole idea of he knew exactly how much effort he needed to expend. I wonder if that changes now that he doesn't necessarily know how things are going to shake out in the Western Conference. Does he put his foot on the gas a little bit more during the regular season, especially on the defensive end, than he did last year, because he just doesn't know how much effort he needs to give.
So a couple things. Next time I play pickup basketball with anybody, especially anybody listening to this podcast, if that ever happens, when I'm walking around, I'm just conserving my energy. I'm picking my spots. I'm more valuable over the long term than I would be if I sprinted around all over the place. It's just strategery on my part. The other thing here, though, is, and this is what I find absolutely fascinating about last year and previous years to this year, is this year, LeBron James is playing on a team without legitimate title aspirations, right, or expectations. Like, nobody is going to be shocked if LeBron isn't in the finals this upcoming year. And to me, I think that can work one of two ways. I think in one way, it might reinvigorate him and light a fire under his ass so that he maybe picks his spots a little bit less. He also has the Western Conference, so he might not have that option anyway. And the other thing that it might do is, like, at some point, his teammates are going to listen to all of this, and they're going to take it personally that everybody is saying, God, look at the crappy roster the Lakers built around him. Rondo's a really prideful dude, and he spent this entire summer hearing about how he was actually a bad acquisition, right? And JaVale McGee is kind of a clown on the court, but he's also very prideful. He went back at Shaq for a lot of the, I think he called it minstrel, right? A lot of the stuff that Shaq lobbed at him for Shaq being a fool. So we know that these guys have this pride in them, and the young guys also have a sense of pride in them, and that's evidenced by how hard they work. So I think not only is it going to reinvigorate LeBron himself, and he's hearing, no, actually, it'd be a shocker if he makes it to the finals. He might not even make the playoffs. But the guys around LeBron, I think, are really going to use the context of past year's expectations with LeBron and compare that to where this team is expected, or what this team is expected to do. And I think that might actually work wonders for everybody involved.
This is probably the closest LeBron has been in a decade plus to being, quote unquote, the underdog, right?
Yeah,
and, absolutely. And, you know, they were always favored to come out of the East, maybe not this past year, but when they dismantled Toronto and all of that, it wasn't that big of a surprise, right? But I think people, it boggles my mind, but people forget how good this dude is. And it's not something where, you know, I talk about, you know, people that cover the NBA being fascinated with the margins and, oh, you got a value contract for your eighth man, and that's super duper important. The reality is if you look back, I went back to the 70s, and which is when I stopped this exercise, but I think the 2004 Pistons were the only team that didn't have a future Hall of Famer on their team that won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the guys who drive the car of the NBA are your very best players in the NBA. It's not super complicated, right? We can, and they're the margins are important, though, where you get the rest of your team is important. But if you have a LeBron James, you're in the conversation. And I think, like, this stuff about the Lakers not making the playoffs and this and that, you're absolutely right that LeBron and his teammates are going to use that as motivation. And just on its surface, it is patently absurd. Unless LeBron has, like, a major injury where he misses a lot of time, like, it's just not happening, and I look forward to the rationalizations that come with that. But I think him being in that underdog position or close to it, I think that's going to be advantageous to him and his teammates, like you said.
All right, we're going to take a quick second, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what to expect with LeBron in the individual construct. And that's not necessarily the same thing as team-wide, because there are quite a few players out there whose success on the court doesn't always coincide with what's best for the team. Shouts to Carmelo Anthony. So we're going to talk about what we hope to see from LeBron in the individual construct. And then in segment three, we're going to get to more of the team-wide stuff and the impact he'll have on the Lakers in its entirety. So again, and this is just this is insane to me. Like, absolutely extraordinary. The dude is coming in, coming off of his 15th year, having played more minutes on average, right, than any player in just about basketball history, not counting like the 60s where, you know, everything was blown out of proportion. But he's coming in from his 15th year, having averaged 27.5 points, 9 assists, basically 9 rebounds, shooting with an effective field goal percentage of 590. and he averaged last year 37 minutes a game, playing all 82 games. That's year 15, man. And I think those who were concerned that maybe eventually we'll start to see that, but one thing that you and I talked about, I think it was two Lakers Twitter hangouts ago, we were kind of sitting all around my bar and one of the things that I said, because you had mentioned that he does pick his spots quite a bit. And I think, and one of my theories is that with LeBron, he stays so healthy because he picks his spots so well. And I think he's going, for all this concern, and a lot of it fair, but for all this concern that the Lakers really have to manage his minutes or else he's going to break down sooner rather than later. I actually think he's so good and knows he's so good that he knows he can pick his spots and still be as effective as you need him to be on a LeBron James team. Would you roll with that theory?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that, I mean, we've been seeing him do it over the last few years. I also think that while Father Time is undefeated and it will eventually catch up to LeBron, I think you're also applying kind of older. Have you ever seen video of like what LeBron does to take care of himself or his workouts in the off season? Like, is it even correct to compare that to somebody that was, say, the same age in 2008 or even 2013? Right. Yeah. You're talking about guys that are utilizing the cutting edge of medicine and technology and analytics. There are all sorts of health analytics. We never talk about them in the podcast sphere and things like that. But the way teams learn how to manage minutes, where guys like the point in their shift where their performance starts to degrade, the point in their overall minutes where their performance starts to degrade. All of these things are being used to lengthen, you know, the primes of guys and to enhance when they are in their prime what their peak is. And that's something that LeBron has the resources to even go beyond what the team is capable of. He's got his own team of people that take care of things like that. And so LeBron at 33 with, 54,000 miles when you count the postseason on him in terms of minutes played, it's just not comparable to other guys that have been in those spots. To me, it's going to be, it's barring, like Kobe's Achilles injury or something like that. It's going to be something that, you know, it's a slow, he slowly degrades rather than something where he falls off of a cliff. And he's improved as a shooter over the last several years. Last season was the highest 3-point rate that he's ever had. I suspect it's going to be higher this year next to playmakers. That's another thing that I think the responsibility of having to create a shot for yourself or everybody else on every play is way more taxing on the body than him playing the 4 or the 5. And even that whole paradigm is probably incorrect to even think of it. The Lakers are playing positionless basketball for the most part. So all of those factors, like, yeah, I think he's an exception to the rule type of guy. I think he's using everything that he could be using to his advantage. And I think we're going to still see, I think by the end of his third year, which is his last guaranteed year as a Laker, he's still a top 10 player.
Yep, absolutely. Just really quickly, in terms of individual production, do you see one kind of theory that's been bandied about a ton is kind of more of a spread out. Now, LeBron is going to get the lion's share of the usage rate, and it'd be crazy if he didn't, right? It'd be insanely counterproductive for him not to. But do you think we see some of his averages dip down in terms of creating for others as maybe he moves a little bit more off ball?
Yeah, I think his assists drop a little bit. I think that he's probably a little more efficient than he was last year. And he's, 62% true shooting. I think you've got – like I think he's going to get more easy buckets created by other people than he did last season. That said, the Lakers don't have – and this is still a hole on the roster, in my opinion, and even like the talks of Kawhi Leonard and things like that down the road. they don't have a guard that is a scoring threat out of ball screens. Mm-hmm. And that was the issue with the offense last year. LeBron now is that guard, right? He's also your big man and your small ball five, right? He's a lot of different things, but he's your LeBron, and he's the guy that can be a threat as a scorer and a creator out of ball screens. There are a couple of, you know, like Ingram is probably the guy who's closest to that. But like, I did a video on him off of the ball recently. He was, you know, like just over 41% effective field goal percentage when on his on ball creation stuff and ISOs and pick and rolls, and like 56 effective field goal percentage when he was off of the ball. That's a big difference, man. And so the second best option on ball screens behind LeBron is not all that great. So to me, LeBron's responsibility is to get this team flirting with, at the very least, top 10 in offensive rating. And if he can do that, I'll be able to, you know, kind of turn the other cheek on the defensive end and maybe some other things. But I think even with those other playmakers, the Lakers offensive world is still going to revolve around him.
Yep, absolutely. The one thing I'm I'm kind of watching for is if he's open to being the screener in these pick and roll kind of situations, where you don't now you still need the guy with the ball to keep the defense honest as they turn the corner, and if they can, you know, if they can basically just trap him and never be concerned about him getting the ball to LeBron anyway, then fine. Or if they're able to just kind of help and recover and stay more honest on those, you know, not have to slide and pay so much attention to LeBron, then the Lakers are kind of in trouble here. But all that I need out of the Lakers pick and rolls is go around LeBron's screen, get him to a spot where Julius Randle was a lot last year in some of his pick and rolls, where he had decisions to make after the fact, and just kind of utilize him in that manner. And I think that's where you really see LeBron make the guards better in ways that, you know, that people might not necessarily be thinking of right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Having two guys who can create shots and make passing decisions out of that, out of the short roll and things like that, it's something Draymond Green is great at, and he's not nearly obviously the scoring threat that LeBron would be. So yeah, I've been, and in the little that LeBron has been the screener in ball screens, he's been just devastatingly effective if you look at his numbers. So the idea of him being able to do that with the multitude of ball handlers that the Lakers have, that's really a place the Lakers can exploit to get really efficient offense.
All right, we're starting to segue into it anyway, naturally. So we're just going to take a quick second here, and we're going to keep building on some of the points that we're making about LeBron's impact team-wide. We'll do that here in a second. So we talked about his being a screener, and that's the thing that I think I'm most looking forward to. The open court stuff, like that stuff, just kind of, you can kind of mention that without mentioning it. It's going to be incredible. The hit ahead passes from Lonzo to LeBron in transition are going to be magical. But if he is open to and really commits to being a screener in pick and roll situations, the Lakers half court offense becomes a lot more explosive to me, because of the amount of space that he's going to command. And Darius for Forum Blue and Gold wrote a good article today, by the time you guys are listening to this, yesterday, about the shooting that people are concerned that the Lakers may not have. But he actually was making the point that they do have shooters around LeBron. They just happen to be good at other things, so maybe you're kind of overlooking how good they are as shooters. So we already started talking about LeBron as the screener. Do you think that that's something he's open? Like, do you basically the question I have is, are you comfortable saying that LeBron is open to do whatever Magic and Luke and the rest of the coaching staff and organization ask of him in the team construct? Or do you think he'll be a little bit more stubborn about this?
I guess that isn't the framing that I look at it through. Mike Trudell did a really good interview with Jesse Mermes, who, you know, Lakers assistant coach, who's essentially Luke's offensive coordinator. And one of the points
that in the world.
Yeah. And one of the points that he was making is that, like, the best teams, like, are led by the players, and the coaches are just kind of chaperones or stewards of that, like trying to guide and help and push, but it's really the team taking control. I don't think it's going to be Luke telling LeBron what to do and then LeBron deciding how much he's going to listen to him. I think it's going to be collective decisions. And in a lot of ways, LeBron's the guy who's driving that. And then Luke is the one who is making adjustments off of that. But LeBron's making the primary decision. So I think LeBron is going to be the guy who, he's the chef that has the ingredients in front of him that decides what he's going to make with it and where he fits in with that. And sometimes it's going to be as a five. But again, if the Lakers don't have a guy who can be a scoring threat out of ball screens, just because he's the five doesn't mean that we're not going to be watching him run pick and rolls as the ball handler, mm-hmm. right? I think that, to me, if I'm LeBron or Luke, however you want to frame it on who's making the decision on what LeBron's role should be, to me, he puts Lonzo, Ingram, and Kuzma specifically into way more natural roles than they were yes. last year. Brandon and Lonzo had way too many on-ball, ball screen type of opportunities that sunk their efficiency. That's not really they can do it, but it's not that's not the best aspects of their game. Kuzma, when Kuzma takes shots that he's supposed to be taking, he's phenomenal. When he gets in trouble, he's one of those guys that's got really good footwork, got really advanced, polished skill set. So he can take shots sometimes that he can make but probably shouldn't take mm-hmm. that drop his efficiency. Well, LeBron's not going to put up with that, and he's going to have the ball in his hands more often than not to take the ball out of Kuzma's hands in those situations where there's 8 seconds left, et cetera, right? So he pushes all of those guys. Now, can he do that from the low post? Can he do that as a ball handler on ball screens? Can he do that as the screener, as you're suggesting? Yes, I think he can do all of those things, but I think that LeBron is going to be the one who makes the decision, and it might change three different times within the same game, but he's going to be the one that's making the meal out of the ingredients.
Yeah, I really like how Mermes put that, and really, I wish more coaches thought like this, period, right? And like one thing that I always got really frustrated with as a player was it's very obvious to the guys on the team what other guys are capable of and what the team collectively is capable of and maybe which system is best applicable to those kinds of situations. And one thing that I give the all-time great coaches a ton of credit for is their flexibility in recognizing, okay, in 1 year where, to use Phil Jackson, for example, an offense with Horace Grant as a power forward is going to be hugely different than an offense with Robert Horry as a power forward. Right. Around if all the other pieces were to remain the same, that the situations and the sets that you're going to run for those kinds of lineups are going to be different. And I don't think Jackson, because everybody thinks triangle, I don't think Jackson gets nearly enough credit for how flexible he was for the different personnel that he had over the course of, say, the three-peat, right?
Yeah, it's funny that he is kind of painted as and rightfully so, he's as being this kind of old school anti three, how's it going type mm-hmm. of guy,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
When in reality, you look back at his teams, with the exception of the first three-peat, he had stretch fours before stretch yeah. fours were a thing.
Yeah.
Tony Kukoc was the first one, right? Then Lamar Odom, right? Lamar Odom would kill it in today's game, right?
He's always my what if player when that question is asked. Always.
Right. He's a guy that could switch. He could defend fives if he needed to, could handle the ball on the perimeter, could pass, and was an okay shooter, right? Mm-hmm. He would have killed it in today's era. And that's very much something that Phil kind of had these I did that breakdown of game 7 of 2000. I'm watching the first half, and they're trying to run these triangle sets, and guys are just sagging off of AC Green and Ron Harper and just like not paying them any mind. And rather than staying spaced out behind the three-point line, neither guy's really a three-point threat. Harper would hit one occasionally, but
yeah.
And it just gunked up the spacing for Shaq and for Kobe and all that. Then magically, they go on a run when it's Robert Horry at the four, knocking down threes, and Brian Shaw knocking yeah. down a couple of two, you know, and like,
yep.
So there were these modern concepts, or what we view as modern concepts now, kind of percolating within that old game. And yeah, that was something that Phil was able to identify who those guys were and exploited at the right times.
Yeah. And to bring it back to this discussion here, is this coaching staff, like it wouldn't shock me if the Lakers, like right when they signed LeBron, if Luke and the coaching staff had no idea what their system was going to look like. It wouldn't have shocked me at all if LeBron, when LeBron was the only commitment to the team via free agency, that they might have had, you know, some kind of inkling based on the pieces that they had there. But they then had to continue to rethink stuff as Rondo was added, as JaVale was added, as Lance was added, and now after Beasley has been added to the team. And now they have the team in its entirety, and they are now looking at it from the team dynamic of, okay, this system seems to make sense, and it's what I'm most comfortable with. But at the end of the day, we have maybe the greatest thinker in basketball history, the most efficient player in basketball history. We'd be stupid not to factor in and really lean heavily on what he thinks is best for this team.
I actually think that those decisions or those ideations were what led to the acquisitions rather than the idea of what the system is going to be coming afterward. I think guys like Rondo, Beasley, and Lance were acquired to fit the style that they wanted to play. I think that's something that was discussed with LeBron, and that is like, this is the type of team we want to put together. And so I think that kind of the cause and effect are reversed in that situation. I think they've had an idea of what they want to do, which is why they didn't go after the bigs, which is something that we've covered as well. So yeah, I think they know what they want to do, and those guys fit it.
Last thing here before we move on. In terms of the team dynamic, we've talked about, you know, guys who are best going to be affected by LeBron. We're just going to have a little bit of fun here. What's the thing you're most looking forward to with LeBron James on the team? I'll kind of give an example here. Like, I personally cannot wait for the first time Lonzo gets a rebound and LeBron was the one who challenged the perimeter shot. And it's evident at right when Lonzo gets that rebound and he looks up ahead and he sees LeBron, hits him with a perfect pass, and LeBron does his usual just elevate like crazy off of his left foot and soars through the air. And like, I can already picture that play in my mind, and each and every one of those are going to get me off of my seat. So what's the one thing you're looking forward to?
Before I do that, I want to kind of further your point, because it's something I hadn't considered, but he becomes like Lonzo has never had a guy where, you know how in football there's guys like Randy Moss or Calvin Johnson or Rob Gronkowski where like they're technically covered, and I'm doing air quotes as I say this, but you just kind of throw it up. Like if it's single coverage, they're not covered at all. Like just throw it up in their vicinity, they're going to go get it. That's LeBron, right? Like Lonzo's never had that Rob Gronkowski, Randy Moss type of guy. And like when Randy Moss got with a great quarterback in Tom Brady, he broke records, right? So there are going to be a lot of times where LeBron's not open, quote unquote, quote on those hit aheads, and Lonzo still gets it to him because he knows that there's that advantage there. Now, in terms of what I'm looking for selfish reasons, I can't wait to pick his brain, right? To be in the practice huddles and things like that, and ask him as hardcore basketball questions as he will be willing to answer. But then in terms on the court, it felt like there were a lot of games last year where it was very close in the last 2 minutes and the Lakers kind of fell apart. I look forward to having a guy where when, for whatever reason, the game stalls, it becomes an isolation game in the last 2 minutes. You just give the ball to him. Like Kobe all those years, whether he was successful or not, he was always that warm blanket. Mm-hmm. At the end of close games, it was frustrating as hell watching KCP take bad shots in the last deciding possessions of the game, or Isaiah Thomas in the few games that he played being just too small to when the defense really locked in, he couldn't get his shot up. Just having a guy that you know can handle that and will be successful more often than not. Like, to me, I'm looking forward to having my comfort blanket back in the form of LeBron James at the end of a close Lakers game. That's number one for me.
All right, I'm gonna write this down as a note. But every time that kind of situation pops up, I'm gonna at you with a blanket, like just different blankets over the course of the year.
Well, and you know how we have our offline conversations about me dropping like fantastic things that you can snip the audio of, like me saying I'm looking forward to having my comfort blanket back. Just snip that out of context. And
I wish you would have said blankie. That's a good one though. Like LeBron, crunch time isn't going to be something like it became something at points last year where we all kind of said, "Oh God, like how's this is going to be an adventure once again, right?" Whereas like with crunch time now, there's something to expect. Crunch times are almost something to look forward to now, because one thing that we're going to see is LeBron's going to handle those kind of crunch time possessions and he's going to dominate those crunch time possessions. Watching the Lakers do that last year, you could just tell, like, none of the guys who were asked to handle those possessions had any idea where to even start on how to handle those possessions. And now they're going to watch maybe one of the greatest ever do that. And guys like Kuzma are going to say, oh, that's what we could take advantage of there. Ingram, who is more capable of creating for others than Kuzma, is going to say, oh, that's where I could find that extra spot for so-and-so there. And that's, you know, watching the growth and the impact that LeBron is going to have on the growth of the team as a whole, like that, you know, beyond the specific play that I mentioned earlier. But he's going to work wonders for these young guys, and I can't wait to watch that happen in real time.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it then for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This was the first of what will probably be many player reviews. We're gonna be back here quite a bit. I might bring somebody on tomorrow that you guys might be looking forward to hearing from, maybe. But we'll talk about Lonzo Ball tomorrow. And then when Pete comes back, we're going to talk about, I think Rondo is who we decided on. And we have, what's up?
I think we're doing, BI first, and then we'll do Rondo. Yeah.
BI and then Rondo. And so both of those guys are going to be, and really the top end of this roster is really fascinating to me. So this will be fun. This will be a fun series. Shouts to Ease for making this all possible. Shouts to everybody listening for making this all possible. It's a good thing that I'm back from vacation early. It's because of your guys' support. Let's continue to keep this ball rolling, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.